Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Waking Up Israel Radio Show. I'm your host, Michael Israel, and we're going to jump right into it. You know, it's 10 p.m. This is a late night edition, I guess you can say. I had a show at 5 p.m., and I overslept, y'all. So, so here we go. We're going to make up for that and still bring in a real good show for y'all tonight. I don't often, you know, do a show this late at night, but when I do, all right, I'll make sure I make it very entertaining for you, all right? And me being a truck driver, one thing I know for sure is that at late night, us drivers, we be on that highway, man, and we like to tune in to such shows, you know, these late night podcast shows, right? And that it just, you know, it passes the time as you're driving, you know what I'm saying? So that's always a good thing. So without further ado, let me bring on my co-host and we can get this thing started, all right? All right, all right. Sister Dale.
You hey, now? Shalom. Yeah. Hey,
shalom, shalom. I'm all right. I'm well rested, you know. So everything's okay. And definitely, man, want to go ahead and get it started off. Now, it's an open discussion like all our shows, but I was hoping to get into some current events. All right? So I guess we can go ahead and get this conversation rolling about what's going on in the news. Well, if you already aware of anything on your end, Sister Dale, that you would like to share, now is a pretty good time to, you know, just kind of get it started, get the conversation started.
Well, you know, I just feel that, you know, we are, so many things are going on in the world today, and there's a lot of angry people, and there's a lot of people hurting other people. All of that is going on, and it's just also terrible that this is going on. If we can just find a way to channel our anger, because innocent people are getting hurt, innocent. And this has to stop. So we have to try to somehow come to a solution. I know they have tried this over and over, but I think it's just the hearts of men. We have to somehow tap into the hearts and spirits of men. You know, that's basically all I know to do. It's hard to do because, you know, we got so many other people out there that are leading people the wrong way. They're saying things to cause people to be upset and cause people to hate one another. Right now in the news, Russia is talking about something about the NBA star that could be released with the swap of a one of the Russians that are in our prisons today. But Russia is using propaganda. He's using, I believe they're using that against us as a racial type situation, because there are two Americans over there. And if the Biden administration agrees to swap for Griner and leave the other American over there, that's just going to cause Americans here at home more, you know, hate towards each other. It's just crazy the way they're using that. And when I seen that, I said, oh, no. We don't need any more of that. And there are so many people that will take that the wrong way, because mentally they're already there. And we just need something else to push us, you know, in that direction. We know that Russia's going to do anything they can to try to help Trump win the presidency. So that's my thing. That's my opinion only. It has no bearing on anything else. I'm just a little American person that's listening to the news. But we're so caught up with stuff like this, with people using strategies and that type of thing that's causing conflict between people, regular people, Americans. And that is something that we have to be very careful, and we have to see it for what it is and not let that happen to us, not let them get the upper hand. We're bigger than that. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, we just have to, for the sake of mankind and our nation.
Right on.
So
right on. And go ahead and finish this, Steph.
No, I was just saying that's just for the sake of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny that you mentioned Russia, all right? Because I got a brand new clip dealing with, well, you know, the doom and gloom, you know, dealing with World War III. You know, it's what's in our news, you know, current events. I just took time out and, like, what's going on? What's the current serious situation that's happening right now? And, you know, and naturally, I just kind of, my antennas zoomed in on what's happening in Europe, you know, because that's affecting our economy today. Me being a truck driver, I'm affected by what's happening over there in Europe. Our fuel prices. Yeah, I'm directly affected by that, you know. I live by, the nature of my job is buying fuel. So if the cost goes up because they're going to get into a war or we got to help, you know, these Europeans over there and their battle and war or whatever, I mean, I'm directly affected by that, you know. I mean, we all are, but my job literally is around this fuel and the fuel economy and the brokers and all of that stuff, you know. So, yeah, so anyway, I was zoomed right in there, and I got a little clip for us to watch, you know. And this clip, I think, is pretty spot on. There's no way to determine exactly how it's going to go. But person literally sat down, whoever they are, and they pretty much put this thing as subject to go, you know, if it was to go down. You know, but there's no, I mean, you shouldn't just, you know, label it as the truth because this is his opinion. But, I mean, I think he's pretty close. And so I want you to listen to this clip I have, Sister Dale. Sit back, relax, get some popcorn, and we're going to listen to this. This clip is about 15 minutes. So, yeah, just sit down and relax, and I'm going to get right to it. It's World War III, all right? Current events. This is it's up to date on where we at with that, all right?
All right.
All right. So here we go. Let me put you on hold. All right. And let's play.
Russia's on the warpath, and if successful in Ukraine, is unlikely to stop there. Lithuania, with EU support, has shut off the flow of military and economic material to the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad, triggering a threat of invasion by Russia in retaliation. A world away, China flexes its muscles as it threatens the United States and their continued support for Taiwan. Fears of World War III are growing by the day, and the United States is taking them very, very seriously. Before we discuss how the U.S. is preparing for the Third World War, first we need to know what its potential enemies are doing. China has long been preparing for a confrontation with the U.S. as it seeks to become the world's dominant superpower. Currently, China falls short of the qualifications for a global superpower, qualifications which only the U.S. fills at the moment. But with its dizzying economic and military growth, it might be less than a decade before the Chinese Communist Party can project power all over the world. China's preparations for a showdown with the West include dislodging the United States as the most important economic power in the world. It also has safeguards to its own economic interests in the wake of economic warfare versus the U.S. And to achieve this aim in 2013, it launched the Belt and Road Initiative. This massively ambitious plan included building new land and sea trade routes all over the world to connect China economically with nations all the way from Europe to Africa. To achieve this, the nation has not just invested in its own infrastructure, but in building trade infrastructure in other nations as well. However, China's partnership with host nations is more often than not extremely predatory. They offer economic loans to build massive projects that promise economic prosperity, like seaports and rail yards. However, the terms of those loans often dictate that Chinese companies must be hired to do the construction, leaving few jobs for locals. Interest rates on the debt traps is often so high that a poor third world nation is guaranteed to default. Included in the penalties for defaulting are clauses such as China owning exclusive rights to the infrastructure it builds for terms as long as a century. It is in effect a modern version of soft colonialism. China's plan is to have heavy influence in the trade of goods throughout Asia, the Middle East, and Africa, putting it in a very strong position to dictate geopolitics in its ever-growing sphere of influence. China's next preparation for war with the U.S. includes securing its vulnerable trade routes through the South China Sea and the very valuable oil and natural gas deposits in the region, as well as the remaining rich fishing grounds. This effort began with the construction of artificial islands in 2013, which continued unopposed despite an international ruling by the World Court in The Hague that such island building and claims to economic exclusion zones around them were illegal. Foreign pressure also failed to stop China from stealing claims to oil supplies by neighbors such as Vietnam, or of using its coast guard to bully and intimidate the merchant and fishing fleets of other nations out of their own territorial waters. These islands have now become heavily fortified military installations, which include modern missile defenses, runways long enough for long-range attack aircraft, and an ever-growing network of surveillance assets, all geared for one purpose: detect, track, and destroy the U.S. Navy. Further preparations have included the addition of dozens of new ships to the People's Liberation Navy, which is now officially the largest in the world. Recently, China's second aircraft carrier came online, and in a few years will be ready for battle, greatly enhancing the CCP's reach in all the important sea and air domains. With Russia's increased belligerence in Europe, there's a serious concern that the two nations might partner up in an attempt to turn the current U.S.-led world order on its head. Despite China's increasing capabilities, it still does not have the power to defeat the U.S. in a one-on-one confrontation, and it might hope to split the U.S. attention by partnering with Russia, thus forcing America to choose fighting between China in the Pacific or Russia in Europe. For decades, the United States maintained a policy of fielding a powerful enough military to fight and win two simultaneous wars against near-peer adversaries. However, with China's rapid ascension, this has become officially impossible without bankrupting the U.S., and thus America has been forced to accept that it may only be able to defeat one near-peer adversary at a time. The question is, how is the U.S. preparing to do that, given the increasing likelihood of China and Russia starting a third world war? First, the situation in the Pacific might seem dire with China's numerically superior navy, but the real measure of naval power is not the number of vessels, but in the number of battle force missiles. These are the number of missiles that both navies can bring to bear against each other. The U.S. maintains around 10,000 missiles versus the PLAN's estimated 2,000, though those numbers have changed and will continue to change as China fields larger vessels and both navies shift in composition. It's estimated that by 2030, China might have closed the gap in battle force missiles to two-thirds of U.S. capabilities. The U.S.'s first line of defense against China is the place that's likely to be ground zero for World War III, Taiwan. The small island democracy broke away from the mainland after the nationalists were expelled by the communists in the aftermath of World War II. Since then, the former dictatorship has become a vibrant democracy that has refused to reunify and put themselves under control of the Chinese Communist Party. Securing Taiwan is not just important for the ever-intensifying global clash between authoritarianism and democracy, but also for very important political and economic reasons. Firstly, Taiwan produces around 50% of the world's semiconductors after U.S. companies ceased production at home due to expense. Semiconductors are important for every single gadget in your life. The global economy quite literally runs on them, and they've become as valuable as a commodity as gas and oil. China itself produces between 25 and 30% of the world's semiconductor supply. So if China were to take Taiwan, it would now be in control of three-quarters of the global semiconductor supply. This would allow China to effectively shut down the economy of any nation that disagrees with it by simply barring the sale of semiconductors to it, giving China incredible power to further control global affairs and reducing the West's ability to oppose its authoritarianism. Taiwan is also politically important, as it makes up part of what's known as the First Island Chain. This is a chain of islands that extends from Japan to the Philippines and acts as a very physical barrier to the expansion of Chinese influence in the Pacific. If China were to take Taiwan, it would not just break this carefully orchestrated containment strategy, but allow China to effectively neuter Japan's ability to resist it. With aircraft and ships stationed off Taiwan, China could target Japan's lines of communication and trade routes that cross the Pacific and hem the nation in, forcing it into subservience under threat of economic starvation. If China takes Taiwan, the U.S. commitments to defend the Philippines and Japan would be made much more difficult, if not impossible. To defend Taiwan, the U.S. has inked several deals, selling the nation advanced weapon systems ranging from fighter aircraft to air and missile defenses. U.S. military advisors have worked closely with the Taiwanese counterparts for years to prepare the nation for invasion. Despite threats from China, the flow of U.S. arms to Taiwan continues unabated. And recently, U.S. President Joe Biden publicly voiced for the first time an unacknowledged truth in American politics. The United States will come to the defense of Taiwan in case of invasion. This greatly angered China, and the White House press corps was quick to walk the statement back. But what seemed like a political guffaw was likely yet another bit of intrigue meant to further the American strategy of keeping China guessing as to how the U.S. might react to an invasion. If China cannot accurately predict what America will do should it invade Taiwan, it serves to create confusion and doubt amongst Chinese leadership. Should China prepare its economy for a flurry of global sanctions like Russia received after its invasion of Ukraine? Or should China expect American F-18s to swarm the skies over Taiwan and sink their invasion fleet? Strategic ambiguity is a powerful tool, and political theater is an excellent method for creating it. But the U.S. is not planning on fighting a war against China alone. To this end, it has helped increase the capabilities of allies such as Japan and most notably Australia, who recently signed a military cooperation pact between itself, the United States, and the United Kingdom. The pact will not just provide security cooperation between the countries, but also help arm Australia with a fleet of nuclear attack submarines. This is of grave concern to the Chinese, who recently attempted to charm Australia away from its relationship with the U.S., a tactic which ultimately failed. In 10 years' time, China might not have to face off just against the U.S. and British submarines, but Australian submarines also, putting the People's Liberation Navy as well as its all-important sea trade routes at increased risk. China imports most of its oil and gas over its seaborne trade routes, and this is exactly what the U.S. is preparing to target in case of war in order to strangle the Chinese economy. Recently, security meetings between Japan, India, the U.S., and Australia were revived after a pause during President Trump's term. The Quad, as it's informally known, aims to tackle global problems such as global warming, cybersecurity, and ensuring a free and open trade environment in the Pacific. This is a veiled implication of the Quad's discussions on how to best handle China's expansion in the South Pacific. Currently, the Quad has no military commitment to each other, but that might change in the future as President Joe Biden makes the South Pacific and confronting China an area of pressing concern for the U.S. India is the only nation in the Quad without a formal security agreement with the U.S., and it has historically refused to sign on to any security partnerships with any nation. However, that may soon change as tensions between India and China escalate, and it becomes clear that India is not able to win a war against the superior Chinese military on its own. Bringing India into the network of security alliances in the South Pacific would effectively hem China in on all sides, and more importantly, put allied ships and planes directly in the path of China's trade routes through the Indian Ocean. But the United States is also taking very material steps to confronting China. War with China would be waged at sea and in the skies with very little of any action between the People's Liberation Army and the U.S. Army. This will be a war of ships and planes, not of tanks and artillery, and the U.S. is preparing accordingly. In an attempt to prepare for a confrontation with China in the skies, the U.S. has accelerated the procurement of F-35s and made getting squadrons of the fifth-generation fighter into operational status a top priority. However, both the Navy and the Air Force have expressed reservations about the F-35's current readiness, which has prompted both the services to supplement orders of F-35s with orders of upgraded legacy aircraft, such as the F-15 Eagle for the U.S. Air Force and the F-18 Super Hornet for the U.S. Navy. To counter the threat of Chinese missiles, including its very vast arsenal of ballistic missiles capable of targeting U.S. ships far out at sea, the Navy has also begun to expand the number of Aegis-equipped vessels in its fleet. Starting in 2015, the Navy also began to work on undoing the strategy of carrier-based sea dominance that it's employed since the end of the Cold War. With the fall of the Soviet Union, the U.S. Navy enjoyed unmatched superiority and complete freedom of action anywhere in the world, and thus surface fleets were retasked with simply protecting carriers. Anti-submarine warfare and anti-surface warfare skills had atrophied as naval strategy centered completely around the big carriers. Now the U.S. Navy is preparing its crews to once again face off against near-peer foes and ship-to-ship battles. Submarines are America's second greatest naval asset after aircraft carriers, and yet remain nearly completely forgotten by most of the world, which is exactly how they like it. Currently, the U.S. has a fleet of 68 submarines and is replacing the Cold War Los Angeles-class fast attack submarines with the new Virginia-class. Investment in submarines has stalled recently, and procurement plans are behind schedule, but the United States retains a significant advantage in undersea combat, despite China having a larger force of less advanced submarines. The realm of hypersonic missiles has received a great deal of attention ever since it was announced that the U.S. was lagging behind both Russia and China in their development. Yet there's some misinformation and confusion regarding this technology that's made Russia and China seem as if they hold a significant advantage over the U.S. in this realm, when they really don't. Firstly, any ballistic missile is hypersonic, and China's recent test that saw a hypersonic missile fly around the world is not very impressive from a military point of view. Technically speaking, this simply doesn't add any additional capability that didn't already exist. The real threat from hypersonic missiles comes from maneuverable hypersonics. These are missiles that can not only fly at hypersonic speeds, but can also maneuver while doing so, making them incredibly difficult to defend against. In this area, all three nations are still struggling to field fully operational missiles, but the U.S. has made great strides in recent tests. One area where the U.S. may in fact be coming up short is the development of advanced long-range air-to-air missiles. Recent photos of Chinese jets show that China has begun to field advanced beyond visual range missiles, while the U.S. is still largely equipped with the AIM-120, an extremely capable and combat-proven air-to-air missile that nevertheless is only effective at medium ranges. However, the Pentagon's F-3R program aims to improve the capabilities of American air-to-air missiles by not just greatly expanding their range, but also improving efficiency in an electronically contested environment. A new generation of American missiles will feature two-way data links, GPS-enhanced inertial measurement units, an expanded no-escape envelope to increase lethality, and improved high-angle off-bore sight capability, allowing pilots to fire missiles without their plane being pointed directly at the enemy, thus lowering their vulnerability. However, the next step for U.S. fighters is the AIM-260, which will feature beyond visual range capabilities and match longer range opposition missiles while bringing the tried and true technologies of the AIM-120. But World War III will also likely involve action against Russia in Europe, as China and Russia are both likely to cooperate in such a scenario. This will be a partnership of opportunity, however, not of choice, as relations between the nations are difficult at best, and Russia grows increasingly frustrated at its status as the junior partner. With Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the Russian military has proven itself incompetent, corrupt, and inept at executing a modern 21st century war. Despite vastly superior firepower, the Russian offensive in Ukraine has all but stalled out. And this is with Russian forces facing a foe that has a fraction of the capabilities of the U.S. military. Simply put, the only real threat Russia can bring to a global war scenario is their nuclear power. With the bulk of the U.S. Army not taking part in operations in the Pacific, Russia would be easily contained by current U.S. ground firepower, while NATO would be short on critical air assets. These are capability gaps easily filled in by NATO air forces. 4 months ago, we would have spent an additional 10 minutes explaining to you how the U.S. is preparing to counter Russia. Today, after seeing what the Russian military is capable of, we honestly don't have to. While victory would come at a cost, NATO would most likely win a resounding victory over the Russian armed forces. The only real threat Russia would pose would be in the first few weeks as the bulk of American firepower is being shipped across the Atlantic and prepared for battle. This leaves the Baltics and Poland vulnerable, but the deployment of NATO rapid response forces would likely be enough to slow down an initial Russian offensive and greatly limit its gains until NATO's European partners can fully mobilize their own armies. U.S. strategy to counter Russian aggression in the next world war is thus based around preparing European partners to better defend their own continent and not be so reliant on the U.S. military, as the conflict against China will consume the bulk of U.S. sea and air power. The Pacific is where the real war will play out, and after its stunning losses in Ukraine, it's unlikely Russia would willingly engage NATO in a third world war anyway. Now go check out World War III hour by hour, or click this other video instead.
Okay. That was interesting. Okay, Brother Michael. Okay, Brother Michael.
Oh, my bad. I was muted.
Okay.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I was having some issues myself. I didn't know if it was on my end, which I am having some problems, but we're going to make it through it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so that was very interesting. It said a mouthful there. Current situations right now, as you can see, strategists are all on the scene, and they're giving their opinions on how it looks, you know. So...
Yeah.
The main two pieces of the puzzle is Russia and China, and we don't really have the money and the resources to fight them both at the same time. So, but after seeing how things going in Europe, the main fight probably going to be in the Pacific, and we're going to go all in. You know what I'm saying, with China. Because Russia's military seems to be you know, not as strong as we thought it was, you know. But the what he haven't touched on really was there's other countries that would definitely get involved. You know, when all of them band together, they can become a mighty fist. So World War III is something to take seriously, and he kind of wrapped it up as in we'll take care of business. But the fact is there's a lot of uncertainty, and there's Bible prophecy, right? Wars, rumors of wars, as you know. But when it's when there's a world war, when all the countries of the world get into a fight, that is life-changing event. And that got to be in the Bible, right? I mean, you know, it surpasses wars and rumors of wars. It's very, very life-changing how it's going to be for the, you know, next hundreds of years. You know what I'm saying? Well, I can't say that, you know. Well, at least the next hundred years, you know. Because, as you know, we living in America, but if America loses this war, I mean, that's going to change all our lives, right? You know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, and we talking about hundreds of years, you know, of another rule. So, yeah, that's very alarming and concerning. And when the time comes, I can already see thousands of our young men from this country all, you know, going to California to get suited up and booted up, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we may just see that in our lifetime. Or my son KJ. You know, it might be in his lifetime. I don't know. Or man, you know. So, yeah, man, that's our situation right now. Yeah. So, I wanted to highlight what China was doing in Africa by putting Africa basically in debt. You know. Several of those countries over there have lined up with China and took their money, and China's like rebuilding their roads and bridges and infrastructure and making Africa into a little nice economy, you know, factories and everything else is being built, you know. So they are already making friends over there. You know, but if things go bad, you know, China basically owns Africa, you know what I'm saying, basically with the type of debt that Africa will have on it. Right. So, yeah, it's one of those type of things. Scary business. But yet, if being the friend of Africa, if China was to win, Africa would then, you know what I'm saying, use the gold there to get out of debt. And at least that's, you know, the rational thinking on that, you know. China may just I'm going to make y'all slaves again. I don't know. But it depends on what those brothers over there, what their, you know, their handshake with China was all about. But, yeah, so in a sense that if China was to win, Africa would be a industry that's got its bridges and factories and making its own money and all of that, you know what I'm saying, come out of that slum that they're in, and we could be a united country, Africa, you know.
Yeah.
You know, those are the dreams that they're shooting for, I'm guessing. And, yeah, so I guess what am I getting at here? Who is the good guy? Who's the bad guy? You know, as an African American, right? You see what I'm saying? Because do we want Africa to have a brilliant strategy to come out of their slump, and so the whole world would look at them as flies in the little children's eyes, starvation anymore. And they got an opportunity to rise and be united, and they got a plan, you know?
Yeah.
Or do I want to?
Well, one thing about it, I think that if China was to take over pretty much the African continent, more or less, African nation, more or less, might have that separate and equal rule, because they will leave us to ourselves to have our own customs and that type of thing, because they would not want to integrate our customs with theirs.
Well,
so
very true.
That might be a good thing. And then we can take advantage of our culture and enrich our culture. Because I think they would be one to where they would allow, accept the differences. But now when it comes to equalization, they probably would not. So they would probably treat us as slaves.
Huh. I mean, that's my line of thinking.
They would probably try to make us slaves, but they would definitely have us at a distance. They would keep us separated. That's what I'm thinking.
You know, that's
the first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, what you're saying is on the minds of us all, that racism will still abound, and blacks are not liked by everybody, so they'll just turn on us and make us lesser class or whatever, you know?
Yeah, they would. They would.
You know what I mean? And, you know, so Africa, they thinking they making a friend, but they getting duped, you know?
They would make them
in our minds. That's the first thing to come to our minds because of the world that we have lived in so far. But if we was to think outside the box, you know, and that pact that they're making to do this thing, I'm sure they thought about
all of
this.
We would not be on equal. I don't think we would be on equal standing. I think that we will be dependent upon them. But we will be segregated. I can see that. I feel that in my heart and soul that we will be segregated. So that would be segregation, which that's what, you know, we want to follow that, you know, to be segregated and equal. But we wouldn't be equal. That's the only difference. We would be segregated, by sure. And
all right, but would we be independent, though?
I don't think we would be very independent. They would leave us to our own customs. I'm sure that they do not want to integrate. They do not want to share their customs.
Their power?
With us. So they would definitely let us have our own customs and our own area. And have separation. And I'm sure they will have talks, but that'll be a level we'll still be inferior to them. And they will be superior race. But that's just the way it is. And that's with all nations. We are definitely not going to be on equal standing with any nation. Unfortunately, I think that's just the way it is.
All right. So they'll be the number one superpower. But the question is, what I'm asking is, would we have our own, do our own thing, is my point. You know, independent of our own.
Yeah, I believe they would. It's just that when it comes to financial institutions, when it comes down to grain, and that type of thing, if we don't learn how to do it ourselves, then we're in a pickle, because we would have to depend on them, you know, to help us with our agriculture and things such as that. because they would still be the superpower, and they would still have all of the things that we need to survive and to maintain a democracy or a culture of our own. I mean, we'd still be in the same position, that's all I'm saying. I believe, this is just my opinion, and I'm no authority, but judging by just China today, and I did a little research, and I don't see any of us over there, really. And I don't see a lot of us, except, you know, when you got military posts in Japan, or you find a little bit of integration, but still, even some documentaries that were out is telling us how the interaction between blacks and different foreigners it's still not just a common thing. It's not.
Well, so well we yeah, I know. I'm not saying that we'll be friends.
No, we will not.
Yeah, I'm talking about will they leave Africa alone?
No, they will not.
Okay.
They will not leave Africa alone. We will be stupid if to even to believe if they said such a thing. We will be
I don't know what type of deal they made, you know.
I don't
what
know
kind
what kind of
pact
kind
of
deal
or deal.
I have no idea, but I'm sure the leaders over there are trying to do the best they can for their country and for the people. So I'm sure they are. I'm just saying that we can't trust anyone.
Go ahead, sister.
We just have to trust that our people are our scientists, our black lawyers, our black doctors, our black bank financial institutions will all play a part, because that's how we will survive. All those in different fields. Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah. Agriculture.
But with that.
Yeah. Everything.
I understand that. But my point is, they have signed over in billions of dollars they have received for infrastructure and things like that. Several countries, almost all of Africa. They're definitely. I understand. You know, I'm just trying to get it out. So they have thought about things, and they all came up with agreement that this is the right way to go, all right? Knowing who they're making a deal with and everything, right? But they looking at it in the, you know, it may look a certain way and viewed a certain way around the world, but they, all these leaders of these African countries, they all kind of made this deal. Right, and I'm just kind of being optimistic that they thought this thing through. Right now, I don't know if they how they truly feel about, you know, is a like another dictator will come over Africa, you know, he be the king of Africa, you know. And, you know, make life miserable on everybody. You know what I'm saying? He's working for China. I don't know. I don't know what the, you know, what, I don't know what's going on like everybody else, but it just kind of seems that way. You know what I'm saying? They all come in agreement like that. That's something that never happened before. And I think that it's gonna be a different reality if that we can't even fathom right now. If the number one superpower of this world was to fall, you know what I'm saying? I think it'll lead us into another way of viewing the world. Go ahead, sister.
You trying to say that's a good thing or a bad thing?
That's the million-dollar question. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Because our lives, where we live in right here in America, because our lives that we're living right here, because our lives that we're living right here in America is near and dear and precious to us. And, you know, in our hearts, we kind of rooting for Africa to have a plan, you know. But in a sense, without us subconsciously, we're thinking still have a plan, even though we're going to win, you know what I'm saying, as Americans, right? Win the war. Because, I mean, we can't lose, right? So
I don't know.
I mean, I want them to win in a lot of ways. I want Africa to, you know, they've been down for centuries. And I kind of rooting for them to have a winning decision that they're all unanimous involved in. I want them to, you know.
Well, that's what they tend to do, I guess.
But in a sense, I'm just kind of looking at it. I don't want my life to change here in America. I'm thinking we're going to win.
Well,
in a way.
I don't think that I would. Subconscious. I don't think I would change.
You know, it's hard for me to picture us losing. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I wouldn't want to change countries, brother.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to go there. I'm just saying that you know that the scene is set. You know.
Oh yeah. Set.
Yeah, it's seen as that, and then so we just go to our Bibles, you know.
Yeah,
and,
that's all we can do.
Right on. And we don't know how Christ is going to, with a stretched out arm, is going to get us all from all nations that were scattered around. Okay? But we're going back to Northeast Africa. Period. That's in our Bible. Okay? You see what I'm saying?
I hear you, brother. I'm just saying that whatever, he knows what he's doing. That's all I can say. And I hope the leaders over there, they're trying to do what's best for the people over there today. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm looking at their lifestyles and everything. But I did see a documentary on that and some of the things that China is coming in doing. But they also are coming in and possessing land and kind of making up structure, infrastructures. And then once they're finished, they're gone. And the people go back to being, you know, they promised them so many different things, like better housing and different infrastructure, and they left before they completed anything like that, and there are people still back the way they were. You know, they had a little bit of an increase, and then they got, then China and the whole industry or whatever, they just left town, and they didn't do what they said they were going to do. So the documentary just kind of let us know that you can't hardly trust them to finish. They made promises, and then they come over and get your hopes up and everything, and you get trained, and then they get what they want, and then there you are with no job and no way to feed your family with a little trainer. That there's no way to use the trainer. So, you know, according to the documentary, that's it says a lot. And that says what it would be like if they were to become a completely, you know, empowered there in Africa.
Right.
I
want you to consider. But we must consider who's writing that documentary, whose perspective that we're looking at. For example, in Hollywood. In Hollywood, the director can make a movie about a man from another planet that comes over here, and he's friendly to people, quick to do good. And when he's going and fighting against the enemy you know, or whatever, we're going to root for him to win it, right? He's from another planet, okay? And whatever that's going on, whether it be a villain or something, a regular human being, just, you know, Lex Luthor, you know, said, we're rooting for the alien to win.
I don't know, brother.
That same director can also make a movie that bank robbers are going around robbing banks, and we're rooting for the bank robber to get away with it. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
because
this was a
there's a system.
It wasn't a movie.
No, but you're missing my point here. I'm saying
I got your point, but you're talking about cosmic stuff, and I can't get the two the coincide. I don't understand. I can't put the two up against each other. A documentary was about these people in their own habitat.
Gotcha. That's
and
why you got to let me finish.
They were speaking
you
in their own
finish.
Language.
I understand. You got to let me finish, and I was going to bring it all home. Okay.
Okay.
What I was saying, the director sets the narrative and have the audience watch it, and he can control it through different events in the movie and based on the main character of the movie and get you watch looking at him and his life and struggles and what he's trying to do, and you're rooting for him to win. The director holds the cards on. He can shift the narrative, right? In one movie, you can rooting for the bank robber. In another movie, you'd be rooting for an alien. Or all-natural good guy, you know. It depends on what that director, you know, who wrote the script and what's it all about, okay? And what I'm saying is that when we watch these documentaries and things like that, we got to keep in mind that they're going to show you things to prove their point, to control the narrative. You see what I'm saying? And so if they can control the narrative. All right, go ahead.
Okay, but what if there's no narrative?
You said, what if there is no narrative?
No, it's just shooting people as they are. And they're just filming people in their own state of mind and let them talk about how they feel things are going. This is
all
not
right,
a movie.
Well.
I mean,
I think you missed my point. Yeah.
You
okay.
were talking about
well.
A movie and directors. I'm not talking about a movie and directors. I'm saying somebody pointing a camera and a microphone in my face.
Yeah.
And I give my opinion. That's not a movie. I'm not being directed.
I understand.
And we see what the camera see and what the people actually say is and everything, but. You know, like in the documentary, it had a child sleeping on the floor and was having difficulty breathing. I don't think that was directed. I think it was actually happening.
And you still missing
real
my
life.
Point.
Okay.
You're missing my point.
I'm just, I don't know. I'm not going to try to say that it was a narrative. I just say that I've seen something that's a documentary that, it looked as though to me that the people over there when China came in, I think that was one even lady said that they didn't even eat the food made by the African women for the workers.
Okay.
You know, they try to sell their food. But the Chinese workers, of course, they did not. They had their rights. And they did not. So they did not blend with the community and people in the community, you know, that type of thing. They say to themselves.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah, so, you know, that's all I'm saying about that.
I know that's what you're saying. All I'm saying is that if they do a documentary on the slums of Harlem, and they'll paint a picture of a whole nation of black people from what they see in Harlem. And they move from Harlem and go to the south side of Houston or something, and it's showing you a narrative that black folks just can't seem to get it together. But if they really represent all of us, they're controlling the narrative.
I think it's in the eyes of the beholder to know and to see what they see and to how they receive it. So you got to understand that I live in New York.
Exactly.
I live in Brooklyn, and I know a little bit of how the situation goes there. So when I see something, I'm familiar with it, and I'll say, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Now, I can identify with that, so I don't think you could you wouldn't get anything too passionate to think it was safe. If it was safe, then I should be able to recognize that. But, you know, so I'm just saying it's in the eyes of the person
it was
that's looking at it.
I'm not saying it was directed or staged. They showed you a situation.
Situation.
They didn't show you nothing good.
I'm not saying
purpose.
It was good. I think they did have a little bit of right way in there. They did do some things for those people in there. They did have a little bit of a time where, you know, life was good. You know, they did start making money for the family.
Who?
But it wasn't.
Who are you talking about?
The communities. I'm talking about
what
the community that
communities. I'm talking about a bigger, wider scale than that single documentary you're talking about.
Okay, well, I'm just saying. I thought you were talking the differences between a documentary and a movie.
No, I was not talking about the differences of a documentary and a movie. I was saying that you got to look at the person even doing the whole setup, the where you can see it.
Yeah, but the whole idea is China was not.
What you see is what they're going to put in front of you, and they're not going to put everything in front of you to see.
They
control what you see. And if they control what you see, then they control the net.
China is just like any other nation that try to take over Africa. They will take over and be superior, no matter who it was. If it was China, if it was the Russians or Germans, whoever it was, or Americans, they would go over and try to conquer the land, and we would always be second-class people over there. That's
in
all
Africa.
I'm saying. Yeah, in Africa. In that country, yeah. So that's enough of current news, but let's talk about something else. Because we just have to wait on the Messiah to come back. That's all I know. Things are not going to change. That's all I'm saying. It doesn't matter.
All right, if you want to change subjects, we can. Oh well. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and play a song, and I'm gonna put you on hold, and we're gonna find a song to play. All right.
Okay.
All right. Let's find a song to play, and let's play Sounds of Sinai. Why not? Right? Thank you. welcome back on this side of the song. I hope that song did something for the spirit right there. Well, we started talking about, you know, the wars, man. What's happening in the current events. Well, it's just scary. It's so scary, and it's a lot of emotions and stuff it will bring out, apparently. We gonna switch subjects, and I don't know, maybe I'll get into some scripture. You know, I got an idea. How about I read out of a book I haven't read before, right here on air? Yeah, I think so. I'm a just pick a book, and I guess I'll read it on air and see if I can get Sister Thales a opinion on that. Let me run it by Sister Thales. Let me open up your line, Sister Thales. All right, what you think about that, Sister?
Oh, what do you mean as far as
I'm thinking about reading a book online from the Lost Books of Israel. I'm gonna read the table of contents, and I'm gonna have you pick it. All right, I'm gonna have you pick which book. Okay.
No, I don't have the book in hand.
I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of people don't have these books. A lot of people don't have these books. Right. So I just need you to bear with me. These are all contributed to the Israelites. Some want to give the warning on them that a lot of Christian pastors and Christianity in general don't subscribe to a lot of these books for different reasons. All right, I don't want to get into all of that. I'm just a lot of these books you never heard of and never read before, and neither have I, by the way. But I've heard of some of them, but I haven't heard of all of them. But what I want to do, I want to read all these books to you. And these are what they call lost books of the Bible, right? And I'm going to read and I'm going to have you pick one, and I'm going to open it up and see if we can find a place to start at and read it. How's that? It sounds like fun to me, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like interesting.
Okay, the first one is the Gospel of the Birth of Mary. And the second one, Pro Evangelion. Okay, I don't know what that is. And then the first Gospel of the Infancy of Jesus Christ. You got Thomas' Gospel of the Infancy of Jesus Christ. And then you got the Epistles of Jesus Christ and Arbogus, King of Edessa. Okay. Then you got the Gospel of Nicodemus, formerly called the Acts of Pontius Pilate. All right. Then you got the Apostles' Creed. Then you have the Epistle of Paul and the Apostle to the Lacedaemonians. So it's a whole other place, apparently. And the Epistles of Paul, the Apostle to Seneca, with Seneca's to Paul. So it's Paul writing to them, and them writing to Paul. So I guess you could say these are letters. All right. And then you got the Acts of Paul and Thecla. All right. Then the first Epistle of Clement to the Corinthians. Now, I've heard of this one. Clement is a student of Paul. All right. Was it a Paul? I want to say... He's definitely Hebrew, but he's also in the mission of starting churches up there with Paul. And so apparently he went up there and preached it up there. But you can hear, you can see Clement in our Bible too. As not a person who wrote anything, you could just, in our Bible, you'll see that Clement was there. You know what I'm saying? When they list off the names that people are there, you'll hear that name Cleveland, and you'll run right by it because you don't know who that is, what part, you know. But in this Lost Books of the Bible, apparently Clement had a book, you know. So Epistle of Clement to the Corinthians. All right. Then the next one is the General Epistle of Barnabas. So Barnabas had a book, apparently. The Epistle of Ignatius to the Ephesians. The Epistle of Ignatius to the Magnesians. The Epistle of Ignatius to the Trillians, the Epistle of Ignatius to the Romans, the Epistle of Ignatius to the Philadelphians, the Epistle of Ignatius to the Cimmerians, the Epistle of Ignatius to the Polycarp. All right, so apparently this Ignatius, he got a few of them here, so I don't know if that's when everything done went down, all the apostles have died, this guy took the torch up, you know, and continued Paul's work, apparently, you know, during the, you know, after everything done went down. So this is the Roman stuff that still went on in the Roman Empire still. Our Bible consists of the lives of the apostles themselves, not necessarily their disciples. You know what I'm saying? So, look like their disciples also wrote stuff. Okay? All right. So, the Polycarp to the Philippians, the Shepherd of Hermas, the second book of Hermas called His Commands, the third book of Hermas, which is called His Similitude, letters of Herod and Pilate, King Herod and Pilate, letters of Herod and Pilate, okay? The Lost Gospel according to Peter, all right? Now, this is the one here that my brother Jet, he then was reading a few scriptures out of these books here. This is the first book of Adam and Eve and the second book of Adam and Eve. Then you got the book of Secrets of Enoch, the Psalms of Solomon, the Odes of Solomon, the Letter of Artis, the fourth book of Maccabees, the story of Issachar, the Testament of the 12 Patriarchs. And then so you got the 12 tribes of Israel, which is Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Joseph, and Benjamin. So that's all 12 of them. Apparently, there's literature with each one of them got something to say. All right. So of all those books I just checked out or read you the titles, which one would you like for me to get into?
I think I would like to go into, and I believe you said the epistle. I guess it's the letters of Jesus Christ or something similar to that.
Okay, like the emphasis?
Yeah.
The epistle of Jesus Christ and Abagus, king of Edessa?
Or
are you talking about the emphasis of Jesus Christ?
No, not the infancy. Infancy. I don't need to. No, I think I wanted to go with the other.
Okay, the Epistles of Jesus Christ.
Yes,
it's two chapters. It's only two chapters,
okay.
So it's a really small book, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so apparently it's very, very small. Okay. Well, yeah, I think I can read this whole thing. Yeah,
okay.
It's very, very. All right, let's get started, okay? A copy of a letter written by King Abagarius to Jesus and sent to him by Ananias, his footman, to Jerusalem. 5, inviting him to Edessa. Abgarius, king of Edessa, to Jesus, the good Savior, who appears at Jerusalem, greeting. I have been informed concerning you and your cures, which are performed without the use of medicines and herbs. For it is reported that you cause the blind to see, the lame to walk, do both cleanse lepers and cast out unclean spirits and devils, and restore them to health, who have been long diseased and raises up the dead. All which when I heard, I was persuaded of one of these too. Either that you are God himself descended from heaven, who do these things, or the Son of God. On this account, therefore, I have wrote to you, earnestly to desire you would take the trouble of a journey hither and cure a disease which I am under. For I hear the Jews ridicule you and intend you mischief. My city is indeed small, but neat and large enough for us both. The answer of Jesus by Ananias, the footman, to Abigail. So this is the reply. That was a letter to Jesus, and this is a letter going back. Okay, the answer of Jesus by Ananias, the footman, to Abigarus the king. 3, declining to the visit at Edessa. Abgarius, you are happy for so much as you have believed on me, whom ye have not seen. For it is written concerning me that those who have seen me should not believe on me, that they who have not seen might believe and live. As to that part of your letter which relates to my giving you a visit, I must inform you that I must fulfill all the ends of my mission in this country, and after that be received up again to him who sent me. But after my ascension, I will send one of my disciples who will cure your disease and give life to you and all that are with you. All right. That's it. It's basically a letter.
Yeah.
It's a letter. And apparently it's not in our Bibles because we don't know if this, if Jesus actually responded back or we don't know. Right? But it's one of those like mysteries. You know what I'm saying?
But like he said in the letter that he requested him to come, that means that he believed that he could do the things
right.
He did. And he was just saying that he's on a mission himself, and he's not gonna come there because he's gotta fulfill the things that he have on his mission. But when he's ascending and he's going to send back, he thinks that if his belief in him, when he comes back, his disciple or his servant or, the Holy Spirit comes through, what's happening, then if he still believes without seeing it. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm thinking. Which that's what I get from that, which is the way it is today. We believe when we have not seen. We have not seen, but yet we still believe. And because of our belief is how, we are being, our prayers are answered. It's because we believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what I'm just saying. And I wanted to hear that, and that's great.
Right. I'm Googling Edessa, king of Edessa, and all of that. And where exactly is this location at? Let's see. I want to say it's the map is showing that it's right there by Greece, Greece and Turkey, right there in Turkey, right there along the river.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely up that way. So after he said he said he's going to send a disciple or something like that to his location, right? After Christ do his thing. Well, that area is part of the Roman Empire. So we definitely see Paul and them going up that way. So, yeah, okay, gotcha. All right, so that's very conceivable. That's very conceivable on that. All right. So, is there another book you want to read, Ma?
So that was a very small, short. Oh, really?
Go ahead.
The other one that's also talks about the Jesus Christ. I'm trying to locate the things that he done when he was walking on the earth.
Who's that?
Jesus Christ.
You said you want to know what he done? I missed it.
The content that you just went over, I want to read.
Okay.
I want you to read what it talks about him while he was on this earth. During the time that he was on earth.
Christ. During the time Christ was on earth, you want to read some more about that. Okay, well, I don't know which one. I'm not familiar with these books. I don't know if they go into deeper in that.
Okay, then you choose one.
Okay. All right. I sure will. Let's go to the 12 patriarchs and read out of Judah, the Testament of Judah. Let's go to chapter 1. And all right, so I don't know if him himself wrote this or this is passed down through generations, through their lineage, you know what I'm saying? And somebody eventually wrote it down. Or this can be, you know, plagiarized or made up. It wasn't in part of our canon. This is just part of Jewish records, okay, that you can find online. And, I mean, you can believe it or not believe it. It's not part of our canon. And the people who organized our canon, they looked at all of this stuff. And some stuff they can't prove that the writer of it was that. And so it's like extra biblical stuff. Like if you want to go to school to learn about Jews, this is the stuff you read. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not part of your canon, but they don't know who wrote this stuff. Okay? Nobody knows. That's why it's not in our canon. All right? And the stuff that's written in these books is not about salvation at all. Like what we just read was about a letter to a whole nother person, you know, that wanted some assistance from Christ. But it has nothing to do with salvation. It has nothing to do that benefits us whatsoever. So it wasn't added to our canon. You know what I'm saying? We don't know if that was actually Jesus that responded back or, you know, we don't know a whole lot. So that's the same thing with all these books. Okay? All right. So with that being said, I'm going to get started and I'm going to read again. I'm going to read in the Testament of Judah. Judah, the first son, the fourth of Jacob and Leah. He is the giant, athlete, warrior. He recounts heroic deeds. He runs so fast that he can out-trip a hind. the copy of the words of Judah, what things he spake to his sons before he died. They gathered themselves together, therefore, and came to him, and he said to them, hearken, my children, to Judah your father. I was the fourth son born to my father Jacob, and Leah, my mother, named me Judah, saying, I give thanks to the Lord, because he hath given me a fourth son also. I was swift in my youth and obedient to my father in everything. I honored my mother and my mother's sisters. And it came to pass, when I became a man, that my father blessed me, saying, thou shalt be a king, prosperous in all things. And the Lord showed me favor in all my works, both in the field and in the house. I know that I raced a hind and caught it, and prepared the meat for my father, and he did eat. And the roes I used to master in the chase and overtake all that was in the plain. A wild mare I overtook, I caught it and tamed it. I slew a lion kid out of its mouth. I took a bear by his paw and hurled it down the cliff. It was crushed. I outran the wild boar, seizing it as I ran. I tore it in sunder. A leopard in Hebron leaped upon my dog, and I caught it by the tail and herded it off the rock, and it was broken in twain. I found a wild ox feeding in the field and seizing it by the horns and whirling it around and stunning it. I cast it from me and slew it. And when the two kings of the Canaanites came sheep and armored against our flock and my people with them, single-handed I rushed upon the king of Hazar and smote him on the greaves and dragged him down, and so I slew him. And the other, the king of Tapua, as he sat upon his horse, I slew, and so I scattered all his people. Anchor, the king of man of giant stature, I found hurling javelins before and behind as he sat on horseback. I took up a stone of 60 pounds weight and hurled it and smote his horse and killed it. And I found with this other for 2 hours. And I claved his shield in twain and chopped off his feet and killed it. And as I was stripping off his breastplate, behold, 9 men of his companions began to fight with him. And I wound my garment on my hand and slung stones at them and killed 4 of them, and the rest fled. And Jacob, my father, slew Bathsheba, king of all the kings, a giant in strength, 12 cubits high. And fear fell upon them, and they ceased warring against us. Therefore my father was free from anxiety in the wars when I was with my brethren. For he saw in a vision concerning me that an angel of might followed me everywhere, that I should not be overcome. And in the south there came upon us a greater war than that in Shechem, and I joined in battle array with my brethren, and pursued 1,000 men, and slew them 200 men, and 4 kings. And I went up upon the wall, and I slew 4 mighty men. And so we captured Hazar and took all the spoils. And the next day we departed to Eretu, a city strong and walled and inaccessible, threatened us with death. But I, Gad, approached on the east side of the city, and Reuben and Levi on the west. And they were upon the wall, thinking that we were all alone, were drawn down against us. And so my brothers secretly climbed up on the wall on both sides by stakes and entered the city while the men knew it not. And we took it with the edge of the sword. And as for those who have taken refuge in the tower, we set fire to the tower and took both it and them. And as we were departing, the men of Tupaya seized our spoil. And seeing this, we fought with them, and we slew them all and recovered our spoil. And when I was at the waters of Kozadiva, the men of Jobel came against us to battle. And we fought with them and routed them and their allies from Shiloh. We slew, and we did not leave them power to come in against us. And the men of Machir came upon us in the fifth day to seize our spoil, and we attacked them and overcame them in fierce battle. For there was a host of mighty men against them, and we slew them before they have gone up the ascent. And when we came to their city, their women rolled upon us stones from the brow of the hills on which the city stood. And I and Simeon had ourselves behind the town and seized upon the heights and destroyed the city also. And the next day it was told us that the king of the city of Gosh with a mighty host was coming against us. I, therefore, and Dan, being ourselves to be Amorites, and as allies went into their city. And in the depth of night, our brethren came, and we opened up to them the gates, and we destroyed all the men and their substance, and we took for a prey all that was theirs, and their three walls we cast down. And we drew near to Thama, where was all the substance of the hostile king. Then being insulted by them, I was therefore wroth and rushed against them to the summit. And they kept slinking against me stones and darts. And had not Dan, my brother, aided me, they would have slain me. We came upon them, therefore, with wrath, and they all fled. And passing by another way, they fought my father, and he made peace with them. And we did to them no hurt. And they came tributaries to us and restored to them their spoil. And I built Thama, and my father built Pabel. I was 20 years old when this war befell. And the Canaanites feared me and my brethren. And I had much cattle, and I had for chief herdsman Aram, the Adullamite. And when I went to him, I saw Pasaba, the king of Adullam. And he spake unto us, and he had made us a feast. And when he had heated, he gave me his daughter, Bathsheba, to wife. She bare me Ur and Onan and Shelah. And two of them, Lord, smote, for Shelah lived, and his children are yea. Okay, that's chapter 1. As you can see, he's naming different things in our Bible, but he's going into detail. Some of these battles we can see, these battles that you can that we can find in Genesis, well, at least a couple of them. But apparently, just what was said, they was making a name for themselves in the land of Canaan, you know. Mm-hmm. It would soon be theirs. But as you can see, they're just a piece of the pie. Later on in life, if you was to continue reading the story, they was soon going to Egypt and live in Egypt, you know, because there's going to be a hard famine that come into the land of Israel. It was right at the end of chapter 1, it was telling you about his wife. Two of his sons had died, and that's letting us know in the Bible, one of his sons died, and the other son was supposed to have a baby by the other son's wife. But the Lord took his other son, too. Judah ended up laying with her, thought she was a prostitute on the corner. And what I'm the reason why I'm even mentioning all that is because we see the story in the Bible, and this is adding way more depth to it, okay? Like, it's telling you the backstory, all right? Do you want me to keep reading? I can go to chapter 2.
Okay.
Okay, but it's like it's giving you a deeper what's happening, you know. But like I said, none of these books are in our Bible. It has nothing to do with salvation. It's not speaking about Christ or any type of heavenly deal, any angels coming, you know, or whatever. It's just their oral stories being written down. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let me take a break, and then I'm going to read chapter 2. All right? Let's take a break.
All right.
Right quick. And all right. Let's take a break. Let me play a song. Let me see how much time we got. 23 minutes. All right.
Okay.
So, let's play Brother Bronze. No, let's not play that one. Let's go. Let's play Glory. Yes, Glory.
Paul, praise the Most High. Hey, it's the last one before I do my table free, bro. That's my heart. My rock, my shield, my fortress, my everlasting King. You gave me life, wanna thank you for this. You're the creator of every day, your everlasting mercy. Unto you do I sing, your laws and your commandments, I keep them close to me. Whoa, you divided the waters for your people. We the best at everything, but we still need you. You the one who punishes us when we do evil. Through the hell of tribulation, he won't leave you. Glory, 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 glory. You are my rock, my shield, my fortress, my everlasting King. You gave me life, wanna thank you for this. You're the creator of every day, your everlasting mercy. Unto you do I sing, your laws and your commandments, I keep them close to me. Whoa, you the one who sent that bread down from heaven. You went to war with many nations to protect us. Came down as a fire on Mount Sinai, and it's still here to this day. Why should I lie? For a brief moment I abandoned you, but to bring you back with a deep compassion, what I plan to do. You disobeyed, I made you slaves, I was mad at you. Had to send my son to die for y'all, somebody had to. Glory, 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 glory. My rock, my shield, my fortress, my everlasting King. You gave me life, wanna thank you for this. You're the creator of every day, your everlasting mercy. Unto you do I sing, your laws and your commandments, I keep them close to me. Whoa.
All right, all right. Welcome on this side of the song. Let me open up Sister Stale's mic.
All right, then.
Okay. It's 19 minutes left. Let me go ahead and kind of get back into that book. I'm going to read chapter 2 of that. Chapter 1 is kind of glossing over his life story. All right. So let's read in chapter 2. And I'm going to try to get that one in, and then we'll kind of talk about it a little bit, and then we'll end it out, all right? Okay, Judah describes some archaeological findings, a city with walls of iron and gates of brass. He has an encounter with an adventurous. In 18 years, my father abode in peace with his brother Esau and his sons with us. After that, we came from Mesopotamia, from Laban. And when 18 years were fulfilled in the 40th year of my life, Esau, the brother of my father, came upon us with a mighty and strong people. And Jacob smote Esau with an arrow, and he was taken up wounded on Mount Seir. And as he went, he died at Anamion. And we pursued after the sons of Esau. Now they had a city with walls of iron and gates of brass, and we could not enter into it. And we encamped around it and besieged it. And when they opened not to us in 20 days, I set up a ladder in the sight of all, and with my shield upon my head, I went up, sustaining the assault of stones upwards of 3 talents weight, and I slew 4 of their mighty men, and Reuben and Gad slew 6 others. Then they asked from us terms of peace, and have taken counsel with our father. We received them as tributaries. And they gave us 500 cores of wheat, 500 baths of oil, 500 measures of wine until the famine. When we went down into Egypt, and after these things, my son Ur took a wife, Tamir, from Mesopotamia, a daughter of Aram. Now Ur was wicked, and he was in need concerning Tamar, because she was not of the land of Canaan. And on the third night, an angel of the Lord smote him, and he had not known her according to the evil craftiness of his mother, for he did not wish to have children by her. In the days of the wedding feast, I gave Onan to her in marriage, and he also in wickedness knew her not, though he spent with her a year. And when I threatened him, he went in unto her, but he spilled the seed on the ground, according to the command of his mother, and he also died through wickedness. And I wished to give Shelah also to her, but his mother did not permit it, for she wrought evil against Tamar, because she was not the daughters of Canaan, as she also herself was. And I knew that the race of the Canaanites was wicked, but the impulse of youth blinded my mind. And when I saw her pouring out wine, owing to the intoxication of wine, I deceived and took her, although my father had not counseled her. And while I was away, she went and took for Shelah a wife from Canaan. And when I knew what she had done, I cursed her in anguish of my soul. And she also died through her wickedness together with her sons. And after these things, while Tamar was a widow, she heard after 2 years that I was going up to shear my sheep and adorn herself in bridal array and sat in the city of Enah by the gate. For it was a law of the Amorites that she who was about to marry should sit in fornication 7 days by the gate. Therefore, being drunk with wine, I did not recognize her, and her beauty deceived me through the fashion of her adorning. And I turned aside to her and said, let me go in unto thee. And she said, with what thou give me. And I gave her my staff and my girdle and the diadem of my kingdom in pledge. And I went in unto her, and she conceived. And not knowing what I have done, I wished to slay her, but she privily sent my pledges and put me to shame. And when I called her, I heard also the secret words which I spoke when lying with her in my drunkenness. And I could not slay her, because it was from the Lord. For I said, at least happily she did it in subtlety, having received the pledge from another woman. But I came not again near her while I lived, because I have not done this abomination in all Israel. Moreover, they who were in the city said there was no harlot in the gate, because she came from another place and sat for a while in the gate. For I thought that no one knew that I have gone into her. And after this, we came into Egypt to Joseph because of famine. And I was 46 years old, and 73 years lived I in Egypt. He counseled against wine and lust as twin evils. For he who is drunken reverence no man. And now I command you, my children, hearken to Judah, your father, and keep my sayings, to perform all the ordinances of the Lord, and to obey the commands of God, and walk not after your lust, nor in the imaginations of your thoughts, in the haughtiness of heart, and glory not in the deeds, the strength of your youth, for this also is evil in the eyes of the Lord. Since I also glory that in wars no comely woman's face ever enticed me, and reproved Reuben, my brother, concerning Bilhah, the wife of my father. The spirits of jealousy and of fornication arrayed themselves against me until I lay with Bathsheba the Canaanite and Tamar, who was espoused to my sons. For I said to my father-in-law, I will take counsel with my father, and so will I take my thy daughter. And he was unwilling, but he showed me a boundless store of gold in his daughter's behalf, for he was a king. And he adorned her with golden pearls and caused her to pour out wine for us at the feast with the beauty of women. And the wine turned aside my eyes, and pleasure blinded my heart. And I became enamored of, and I lay with her, and transgressed the commandment of the Lord and the commandment of my fathers, and I took her to wife. And the Lord rewarded me according to the imaginations of my heart, insomuch as I had no joy in her children. And now, my children, I say to you, be not drunk with wine, for wine turneth the mind away from the truth and inspires the passion of lust and leadeth the eyes into error. For the spirit of fornication hath wine as a minister to give pleasure to the mind. For these two also take away the mind of man. For if a man drink wine to drunkenness, it disturbeth the mind with filthy thoughts, leading to fornication, and heateth the body to carnal union. And if the occasion of the lust be present, he worketh the sin and is not ashamed. Such is the inebriated man, my children. For he who is drunken revereth no man. For lo, it made me also to err, so that I was not ashamed of the multitude in the city, in that before the eyes of all I turned aside unto Tamar, and I wrought a great sin, and I uncovered the covering of my son's shame. After I had drunk wine, I reverenced not the commandment of God, and I took a wife of Canaan to wife. For much discretion needed the man who drinketh wine. My children, herein is discretion in drinking wine. A man may drink so long as he perverts modesty. But if he go beyond this limit, the spirit of deceit attacketh his mind, and it maketh the drunkard to talk filthiness and to transgress and not to be ashamed, but even to glory in his shame and to account himself honorable. He that commits fornication is not aware when he suffers loss and is not ashamed when put to dishonor. For even though a man be a king and commit fornication, he is stripped of his kingship by becoming the slave of fornication. as I myself also suffered. For I gave my staff, that is, the stay of my tribe, and my girdle, that is, my power, and my diadem, that is, the glory of my kingdom. And indeed I repented of these things. Wine and flesh I eat not until my old age, nor did I behold any joy. And the angel of God showed me that forever do women bear rule over king and beggar alike. And from the king they take away his glory, and from the valiant man his might, and from the beggar even that little which is the stay of his poverty. Observe, therefore, my children, the right limit in wine, for there are in it four evil spirits, of lust, of hot desire, or of filthy lucre. If ye drink wine in gladness, be ye modest in the fear of God. In your gladness, the fear of God departeth. Then drunkenness arises, and shamelessness stealth in. But if ye would live soberly, do not touch wine at all, lest ye sin in words of outrage, and in fightings and slanders, and transgressions of the commandments of God, and ye perish before your time. Moreover, wine reveals the mysteries of God in men, even as I also reveal the commandments of God and the mysteries of Jacob my father to the Canaanite woman, Bathsheba, which God bade me not to reveal. And wine is a cause both of war and confusion. And now I command you, my children, not to love money, nor to gaze upon the beauty of women, because for the sake of money and beauty, I was led astray to pursue the Canaanite. For I know that because of these two things shall my race fall into wickedness. For even wise men among my sons shall they mar, and shall cause the kingdom of Judah to be diminished, which the Lord gave me because of my disobedience to my father. That's 32. There's still so much to go. I'm going to stop right there, take a little break myself. It is 6 minutes left, well, 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say so far in me reading that?
That almost says a lot. It just says a lot. And it's about, you know, his behavior. And, you know, he repented, he sinned, and he talked a lot about, you know, wine and lust and beauty and fornication and that type of thing. So, yeah, that's a lot to learn from what he was saying. And so he's trying to, he said, but he done already made an error. And it's already, he has children from that sin, you know. And
right.
So he, you know, he got now that's, yeah. So he got some that's in that that come from that seed. And so I think that's why we're at where we're at today. So indifferent in so many ways, but the same.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah, it starts off with him. It starts off with him being a young man and running real fast, light speed, you know. He was able to catch animals by running after them and stuff like that. And, you know, and he was, had strength as in his youth, you know. And, you know, he didn't fought different animals, cheetahs, or what do you think, leopards and, you know, a bear or something like that, you know. And bold, you know, everywhere he went, it seemed like the Lord was with him and gave him might and strength and speed. Then the story took a turn. He grew up and they went to, his family went to fighting with other people, and the Lord was with him then. Talking about when he started drinking and making serious errors, you know.
Yeah.
And he's saying all that departed from him after, just like he went downhill with wine.
Yeah.
And it seems like that was going into the message, and that is he's telling you how to overcome wine, overcome what that educating you on what that takes away from you, and what God desires from you. You know, right? God can be with you, and he could be, you know, all these things God could be doing, but wine would take all of that away. Is what I'm kind of, you know, hearing. You know what I'm saying? Understanding so far. But that was pretty heavy, pretty deep. Now, all of these are passed down words from father to son, and somebody ends up writing this down, right? And so it's not in our Bible because it has nothing to do with salvation. It has nothing to do with the testimony of Christ or anything like that. It's just Jewish literature, right? So I just thought I'd just, I say Jewish, but you know what I mean. It's Israelite literature. Yeah, because the reason why I got all these books is I wanted to, everything got to do with Israelite, you know? I want to read every single thing that got anything to do with it. It's not that I got to, you know, understand there's bones in the fish now. I do. I get that. But, I mean, I still want to read it, okay? You know, so that brung upon me searching for it and finding it and downloading it to my phone. I don't have these books, you know, in hard copy. It's just on the, well, internet. So the Lost Books of the Bible. And it's all the Israelite, you know, records that's available online. Are they some records that we do not know anything about that's probably being kept under lock and key? Maybe. It's a mystery. I put it all out there. But then again, maybe they don't. Maybe there's still some more stuff that we don't know nothing about. But I wanted to take this time out on the show to, you know, kind of read that to you. You know, get your opinion of it and, you know, bounce some things off of it. Yeah, but as you can see, there's a bunch of books. But before we just dive into other books, I guess we should make sure the Bible is our foundation, right?
Yeah.
It's good to read about stories, you know, that happened a long time ago, but the Bible is our faith. So. Anyway, so sister, anything, any more last things you want to say before we just kind of end the show?
No. I just wish you a safe journey, a continuous journey, and this was a good show, and we'll try to make the next appointed time tomorrow.
All right. Five. All right. Tomorrow at 5. Gotcha. All right. So we'll pick up in verse 33 of the book of Judah. If you don't let me forget, you know, and
okay.
I'll probably end up just reading the rest of that chapter. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
All right. So that's what's up. And, today is Sunday. So Monday at 5:00. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, Sister Del,
okay.
Thank you. Shalom. Shalom to you, sister.
Shalom to you too, brother.
All right. Phone, put you on hold, Sister Dale, and we'll. I've been here lately. I've been playing something different as my outfit. I'm gonna play light. I'm going to play this one here.
You are not important because of how long you live. You are important because of how effective you live. And most people are so concerned with growing old rather than being effective. The people who have impacted the world didn't live long.
Children are the liars. Children are the liars. Children are the liars. Children are the liars. Children are the lies, yeah. Children are the lies, yeah. Children are the lies.
wise. Follow law so precise, yeah. How much y'all pay the price? We in here like lice, yeah. They ride our waves like bikes, huh. Devil watches like yikes, huh. We never do what he likes, huh. And I'm watching all the demons, they sneaky. Yeah, they always coming at us like 3D. And I'm praying that the Ruah don't leave me. We growing sis just like Dexter and Didi. The devil always try his hardest to beat me. It'll never work like Stevie and Mimi. Y'all don't get it, reality TV. And if you don't, then I understand. Cause on the other hand, yeah, I barely watch TV. Meditating so the angels can reach me. Frequencies like a satellite TV. Discern the spirit so I analyze easy. Wickedness in the spiritual realm. They can try me, but it ain't gonna be easy. If it's beef, then I end them all easy. It's going down just like fringes of Zeezy's. Children of the lie, yeah. Children of the lie, yeah, yeah. Children of the lie, yeah. Children of the lie, yeah, yeah. Children of the lie. Children of the lie, yeah, yeah. Children of the lie. Children of the lie. Children of the lie, yeah. The kingdom of heaven.
And therefore, when you have a purpose for your life, it disciplines your behavior.
Children of the lie.
And chooses your habits. Purpose gives life meaning.
This is what the Pharisees try to stop. This is what got John the Baptist blocked. This is what got Paul neck chopped. This is what introduced the Ruah. This is why Moses wrote every jot. This is my guaranteed heaven spot. This is the gospel of a Mashiach. Guaranteed none of this getting stopped. Sit still, clear your mind, praise Yah, meditate. See myself small like FaceTime. Seek his face and his peace. Renovate.
Tapped in.
Elevate for heaven's sake, no pun intended. Recommended, delegated, like a senate. Out of box, out box, like I sent it.
I feel the spirit.
Y'all bless me with the wisdom, so I spill it like beverage. Meditate in the field, son of edges. Read his words like he texted. Uh-huh, not a Bible, but a weapon. We the army, why you stressing? Triple numbers manifesting. They don't know better, adolescent, that's the lesson.
Huh, not finna play with y'all, bruh. The Hamashiach specifically said, if thine eye be single, it shall be full of light. What do you think he was talking about? He said single, eye, that is singular, not plural. But the world take it and say it is the third eye, so we see it as wickedness. No, that's the gateway to the kingdom of heaven, bro. Focus on nothing, praise the Most High until you feel his energy. Shalom.
Here's another statement I thought was interesting in the book of Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1. To everything there is a season, and to every purpose there's a time under heaven. In other words, if you are in heaven, it's eternal, there's no time. But when you come below heaven, you now have a purpose that has been fulfilled in time. That means...